Hello, and welcome back to the Self-Healer Soundboard. On our previous episode, episode 82, Allowing Our Anger, we've gotten a lot of great conversation and feedback and direct requests to do another episode about releasing that anger. So we created a conversation around normalizing and validating this very real human emotion and experience that is anger. And we heard and see that many of you are wanting actual practical ways, of course, to release the anger that is within us. So thankfully, given our current recording schedule, we were able to see those requests come in real time and wanted to devote this next episode into all about releasing the actual energy and emotion of anger within our bodies.
This podcast conversation and all of these comments is also mapping onto what we're covering for this month's course in the Self-Healer Circle, which is also named Allowing Our Anger. And very similarly, a lot of the members, when we just had our beautiful content teaching that you offered last week, Jenna, we're exploring this same awareness. Once we become aware that we have that energy, that's what anger really is. It maps on to, you know, having tension in our muscles, our heart rate escalating, maybe feeling sweaty. I remember a lot of members even acknowledge feeling like we're going to explode, our chest is going to explode. That is absolutely the first step of releasing our anger, because if our attention isn't, you know, to the fact or the reality that there's anger within our bodies, if we're so used to suppressing it because we've been shamed or guilted, or the messaging that we've been receiving around anger is that it's not actually a normal experience, a lot of us do turn our attention away, keep it so locked beneath the surface that we're shut down to that very visceral or physical reality that, you know, anger is happening in our body and is in mapping on to these sensations. So we're not going to be able to release or make that, you know, next step of new choices, which we're going to dive into on this episode of what to do, how to release it, until, of course, we become really present to the uncomfortable reality of those sensations alive in our bodies.
And that's exactly why the last episode, as well as the Self-Healer Circle content, was called Allowing Our Anger. And we didn't do a whole episode or a whole course talking about allowing it, observing it, and then releasing it, because that first step really is so foundational that we want to go and skip to just releasing and getting rid of, because we don't want to experience it. It's uncomfortable. It's literally energy in motion in our body. That's what emotion quite literally means. So we do have a lot of empathy for those that want to skip right to go into release and go to get rid of. And we want to make sure that we're doing this intentionally, which is why both the Self-Healer Circle content in last episode were set up as the containers they were, to really stop ourselves first in practicing and cultivating those skills of naming it, of being present enough to say, my heart is beating, my face is really flushed, my jaw's clenched, I feel really angry, I'm experiencing a lot of anger, and then noticing where that is in our body. Giving ourselves that language out loud and then actually identifying it somatically and where it lives gives us a first validation to actually feel it. If we're not doing that, then we're just suppressing something away. And when we suppress, what we're actually doing is taking that energy that's in motion in our body and literally shoving it into our body, shoving it into our organs, into our cells, into our tissue. That only is going to create further conflict down the road, or inflammation down the road, which then leads to diseases, cancer, diabetes, Crohn's disease, bowel symptoms. A lot of these chronic diseases of today come from directly inflammation. And there's plenty of research to show that. So it really highlights the focus of why we do pause at that first step to observe it, see where it is in our body. And then this next step, which you all have naturally requested, okay, now that I've taken the time to really do that and not just shoo it away, how do I then intentionally acknowledge it's there and begin the process of actually releasing? So thank you guys for all of your feedback and your interaction and attentiveness, because it also shows us that you are wanting and willing and ready to handle these things, to heal. A lot of us are waking up to finally being willing to feel all of the things we've been so afraid of or so shameful of, because we now have this new global awareness that I see continuing to increase, that in order to actually heal, we have to be able to feel. And to choose to feel means actually sitting within our bodies the presence of these very extremely uncomfortable emotions where we do tend to feel like we've lost our sense of control.
And I think what's really important to piggyback off this beautiful wisdom, Jenna, is that, you know, not only does anger cause stress in our bodies, and again, this is referencing a little bit of what we dove into during last podcast episode, so many of us then, if we even do become aware, and this is myself included, that I'm feeling angry, we have a habit, often created, of course, in our childhood, of externalizing our anger or making it about something in our external environment. So then naturally our next thought becomes, well, to release my anger means that this thing that's causing my anger, this person, this conversation, you know, this discomfort out there needs to be removed. So just wanting to highlight and again, commend everyone listening that when we're talking about owning our anger and allowing our anger, it also means we're taking responsibility to release our anger, you know, acknowledging that it is something within us. Yes, there are circumstances that have activated our anger, of course, though if we go into this next step, you know, anticipating that the only way we're going to be able to release or let go of this anger is if something out there changes, then we really do remain just as powerless and allow our anger and our circumstances and our relationships to control us as opposed to taking that ownership. Yes, of course, something activated my anger, though now that it's alive within me, it is my responsibility to release it, not to wait for that thing to be removed so that it naturally goes away on its own.
That's one thing I noticed this come up in the content teaching in the circle we did last week as well, that we are always, always responsible. We are the ones responsible for our anger, for the reaction to our anger. Now, whether we take accountability for being responsible is another story, though each of us is responsible for how we choose to either react or respond to our anger. And in the comment section during that live teaching, a couple people were referencing how they'd heard a quote from you saying before, something along the lines of, you know, we can't control what happens in the external world, but we are responsible and can control our response to it. So in all of these conversations, know that there is a very core foundation here that we understand we can't control the external world or the external environment. Though at any given moment in time, and this creates a lot of disagreement, which I really love. I think it's really healthy to have this conversation that we are, no matter what, responsible for how we respond to all of the events that occur in our lives, to all of the happenings in our lives. We are also responsible for the meaning and the story that we create around those events. So even when, you know, big, intense things or awful, tragic things happen to us that do ignite and warrant, I think in some ways, a lot of anger, a lot of rage, that doesn't give us a free pass to then just go and be rageful and externally or internally hurtful and harmful to ourselves and others just to match that rage that was given at us. So we say this with a lot of empathy and compassion because we're all dealing with a lot of really big things in our own lives and in the world at large. So having a space of compassion for yourself and also for others, I think in any conversation around anger is really going to serve all of us because anger does actually occur too as a secondary emotion where a deeper root of that usually is from a fear or a loss or a sadness. And when that feeling of sadness or loss, abandonment, whatever it is, that can be very vulnerable and very uncomfortable. We feel like we lose control in that very scared, vulnerable place. So as humans, it becomes safer and easier for us to just go shift into anger. We cover up needing to feel that grief or that sadness, and then we go shift into anger, which then sends this whole threat response in our body where our muscles are tightening, our blood gets shunted away from going to our gut and actually starts to go to our muscles and other parts of our body to prepare us as if we actually were going to fight a tiger or we were out in the woods needing to defend our lives. So imagine over time, as a society, when we have such repressed and suppressed anger within us, our bodies are constantly living in this state as if we are ready to fight. And we know that inflammation then causes disease. You can start to see the importance of why these conversations about acknowledging your anger, giving language to it, and then getting into moving it out of your body are so important, and how each of us has access to actually witnessing and moving this anger out.
And I think what is the really important distinction here that Jenna, you're speaking about right now, is learning how to be more consciously present when anger is happening so that we can be responsive, as opposed to falling back into the very evolutionarily driven reactive patterns that happens to all of us when we feel threatened, which is reactivity. And this is, to speak to your point, by no means a free pass that, you know, we're giving ourselves. Well, I exploded in anger. I said and did things that were hurtful to those around us, or even harmed myself, though, because it happened, right, from this deep reservoir of anger that has been accumulating over time, that somehow makes it okay. That's not necessarily okay when it's from that unconsciously driven place, because just speaking from my own experience, things I've said and done in anger that felt like my truth, once I've come back to that more grounded, conscious place where I'm still able to feel the tension, I'm still able to feel the heat in my body and the remnants of that anger from my more conscious, heart-connected space, I don't mean those things. I didn't actually want to do those things. So that is the difference between reacting from anger and being present to the experience of being angry while still maintaining that ability to choose what we do. So again, this is by no means to okay explosions, implosions, or whatever it is, because we're releasing anger. It's to learn how to be present so that we can be responsive. Because again, speaking from my lived experience and what my opinion is of all of us and joined in humanity is we don't actually want to hurt other people. We don't actually want to cause ourselves or our environments or our relationships or even the world at large harm. And when we are in that grounded place, we're able to access that compassion, that groundedness, that responsiveness that we're talking about.
Much like the work to not explode in those heightened or angry moments is done outside of the moment, which we talk about often. And I saw in the comments on YouTube, a lot of you are aware of that. You practice nervous system regulation. You practice self-care. You're building relationships with yourself. And yet you still find yourself in those moments being really triggered and then explosive. That's also okay. It's really important not to look at any behavior here on a moral scale. We're looking at it as human, part of our humanity. We all experience these emotions. We all also have very similar responses. Some of us will go internal and shut down. Some of us will explode and be rageful and think, oh my gosh, I'm the meanest person on the planet. Nobody else could do this. When in reality, you've got 8 billion other people experiencing the very same thing. So quite literally, in the moment of feeling that anger, the first step to releasing it is naming it. That's very intentional, even acknowledging and saying, I am experiencing, and the language here is important. If I say I am experiencing anger, I'm having, the me over here is having the experience of anger. That's much more empowering than if I am to say I am angry. It's a very slight shift. And if for some of you, I am angry is the articulation that comes out first, that's great because you're practicing observing it. And you may find it helpful to also start to shift that language or start this way intentionally if you're starting from the very beginning and say, I am experiencing anger. I am experiencing rage. You are the self that is experiencing the emotion that is occurring as physical sensations within your body.
The reason why it's so important, or labeling it, you know, accessing that language part of our brain can be so helpful, is because it does create that space. It just a little bit shifts us out of that somatic or that body experience where we are within the emotion itself, accessing that different literal level or state of consciousness where I'm able to access that part of my brain. So to speak to your point, you know, especially for those of us who have been disconnected from our body, we don't yet have that somatic language of our sensations to be able to map onto it, or we're completely dysregulated because we're still locked in survival mode. This is where, again, I want to emphasize or go back to your suggestion of it is all of those foundational pieces of creating safety, of, you know, eating well, sleeping well, of learning how to regulate our nervous system so that we can even extend that access to that different part of our conscious state. Though that is what that helps us do. When we are in the language area of our brain, we are in a different part of our brain that allows us then to have access to future-based, right? We're able to play the script forward and determine that, you know what, if I were to explode in this way, that doesn't give me the long-term outcomes that I want. All of that is housed in a different, higher processing state of our brain. So labeling it allows us to take that first step in accessing that state. Though, again, I want to compassionately acknowledge that, especially for me, I, you know, for a very long time, wasn't able to label it because I was so dysregulated. I became that emotion. I literally lost that conscious state of awareness to be able even to hold space and make that shift over.
I love that you brought up this space here. And this is a question that came up recently when we were in Europe. I forget at which event, but someone asked Nicole to describe or explain what she means by space. When we talk about that space, what is it? And it's literally what she just said. When you take particularly that language and you are specific with it, you no longer assign the human experience you're having as the end all being that you are creating and affirming for yourself that there is a being over here that is you, that is then having a human experience. Just by shifting the language of saying, I am experiencing anger, there's the I over here, and then there is space between you and the experience. There is now room for you to be a being that is unshakable, rooted, grounded. You can't mess with this being. It is whole and complete always as it is. That being is going to go through a whole array of experiences through life. So small little things like that with language are so important because they offer you such a grander opportunity that in the moment you're not even aware of, but your body is, your mind is, everything is responding to that particular language and that messaging, reinforcing that there is a perfect and complete I, this being that is going through an experience. So if you are beginning this for the very first time and don't even have to work on shifting, I would really suggest practicing like that, not even just with anger, but in any emotion, in sadness, in tired. Instead of saying, you know, I'm tired, I'm sad, I'm sick all day long, someone saying, I'm sick, I'm tired. How could you be anything but sick and tired if all day long you're spending all of your present time declaring and affirming to your body, yourself, and the universe that you are sick and tired? You're going to get the result of what you keep declaring. If I am to express that, you know, I'm experiencing sickness, I'm experiencing being tired, or I'm experiencing tiredness, I know that this can sound a little like I can picture someone rolling their eyes or being like, you know, this is a little annoying or a bit much. Though those little shifts are actually going to create the separation subconsciously of everything you're experiencing. So when you do practice these small tools, over time, you're going to be light years ahead of where you were if you were still continuing to declare yourself always as the emotion you're having or the experience you're having.
And I think here it's important then to shift focus back, right? Not to that again, then get caught up in our languaging, in our story, in retelling whatever experience it was that, you know, activated that anger, to really drop back into the physical body and deal with those sensations, deal with that tension, deal with, you know, the blood racing through our veins and the sweat and the clenching of fist, and begin to then in that space that we've now created, make new choices to actually allow it to release, to, you know, take that walk around the block, maybe do something a bit more vigorous, like shaking your body. Or I know one of the things that I've built into a morning workout routine is actually a punching bag that lives outside. And so maybe going outside and, you know, putting on those gloves and throwing some punches, actually finding the way that uniquely works for each of you individuals. I just gave a couple different examples, but again, here it's important to explore within yourself, begin to make new choices that are, you know, more body-based through movement, through shaking, you know, to actually allow the energy to move through your physical body to get to that point of completion.
If you think of animals here, I think of animals because we are animals. If there's discomfort, if there is any sort of rage or a fight even, you'll watch animals quite literally start to shake. They'll shake off discomfort. They'll shake off an occurrence or an interaction or a fight that they just had. They're releasing and moving that energy. So giving the language to it is our most direct way to observe it, then observe it in our body. You might then see, if you watch movies or maybe watch children who aren't even instructed to do this, or yourselves when you're really angry, you might notice yourself like grunting or almost fuming, or maybe someone like shaking their arms or kind of going like, huh, like that sort of, I don't know, like a bull digging their hooves into the ground. That behavior is your body's natural instinctive reaction to release the emotion, which is literally emotion is energy in motion. So that anger, the rage, frustration, resentment, whatever you're feeling, that's swirling through your physical body, through physical sensations. Grunting or yelling. Some of us need to scream or move our bodies, jump up and down. You'll see little kids throw a tantrum and they're kicking and screaming and pounding the wall. Or maybe you are an adult seeing another adult throw a tantrum, or you're the one throwing it. There's a reason that there's such an avatar almost for what an explosive reaction looks like or what a tantrum looks like. If someone instructed us to act out an angry tantrum, I think most of us would be able to do so because our body naturally goes into a reactive state. Why does it do that? It's literally attempting to release the energy. If we don't allow ourselves to identify, observe, and like declare, I'm experiencing this anger, I have it, and we just choose to shove it down or push it away or deny it, then all of that energy that's causing those tantrums and that rage or that shaking, that's still there. You're just choosing to shove it so deep into your body that down the road, your body's still storing it. It is going to cause dysregulation. It is going to cause explosion elsewhere. It is going to cause inflammation and disease elsewhere if it's not dealt with. So while we might not be in a, you know, say you're in a public space and something very triggering happens or a memory comes in and you get very rageful, I understand that might not be the opportune time to clench your fists and punch a wall and scream. Though being responsible about our own behavior and knowing if you feel that in yourself, or maybe you notice that in your children, that that's how they choose to react or respond to big emotions. That's nothing to shame. That's actually a very healthy and normal response. The importance is to start a conversation around it. Start a conversation with yourself first and realize, whoa, you know, there's a lot in me. I do need to punch something. I do need to get this out in an angry, rageful way. Maybe I need to go throw stones into a lake, or I need to punch a punching bag, or I need to go into a closed room and scream into a pillow and actually angrily and safely and responsibly get this emotion out. That's okay. And if you're an adult who's around children in particular, that's something really valuable to express and describe to them. If you need to shake something out or you need to go and scream or punch something, you can have that conversation with that child that there is a lot of heightened energy running through your body. And if it doesn't get released, it's going to stay stuck in there. So you want to find ways to move it. When you do that, you can also then model that behavior for your child to be able to identify and come up to you and say, you know, I am experiencing a lot of rage right now. Children will actually do that. And then they will go walk themselves into a room and go scream into or punch into a pillow. And they'll feel that release if that's what they've been modeled.
I think what's so interesting here in bringing up a quote that you often, Nietzsche's quote about the wisdom in our bodies. I mean, the reality of it is our body does instinctually know how to release it. Though often what happens is our mind, our psychology, we get in our own way. We judge, we worry about how we'll look if we're screaming into a pillow or throwing air punches, and we worry what that'll mean about us. And we worry, and then we remove our body's natural ability to give itself that release. So for anyone out there who is maybe even unsure of what to begin to do, it might mean just shifting from that focal point of judgment, of criticism, of shame, and maybe just paying attention to what your body might naturally want to do. Do you not, you might begin to instinctually tune into, my arms want to flail, or I do want to jump or shake or collapse onto the ground and scream. And when we get out of our own way and we really tune into our body, your body does hold that wisdom. It has that inner knowing. It will engage in that natural cycle, much like animals, of releasing that energy if we just get out of our own way and allow our body to do that.
And we can only allow our body to do that if we actually are allowing it to feel. And if we're not identifying or acknowledging the anger, we cut ourselves off from feeling. And many of us have become professionals at cutting ourselves off from feeling. And we go through these lives in complete dissociation, complete autopilot. And we talk about, you know, feeling or observing the sensations in our body. And we do have a lot of empathy and understanding that so many people actually can't do that yet because they are so far disconnected from their body. So again, I think this is just another moment to acknowledge each of you who are tuning in, who are even interested in these conversations, who are sharing these conversations with friends and family, or replying and giving feedback. It's so important and really so inspiring to see just the instant response and really the gratitude for conversations like this to really breathe some life and compassion into a lot of these experiences that we then take all our life away from. We say, oh, that's so bad and shameful. I'm just going to completely disconnect from it. When we do allow ourselves to feel it, there is so much beauty and so much wisdom to then connect to. And you get to kind of team up with your body and live this life intentionally inside this beautiful body that, given the chance, when we are present with it, it will steer the way for you. It will guide you. We are no different than the seeds and the trees and nature outside, or animals outside. They're not lost in their thought of their to-do list or their ego. They don't have ego. Nature is just in a perfect semblance that flows and just takes care of and nurtures itself. We are literally the same being. We are nature itself. And given the chance, when we choose to be present and tune in and give gratitude for all of these experiences and feelings, instead of shaming them, we will allow our heart space and our natural essence to really heal ourselves. But we first have to be willing to feel all of that discomfort and kind of pave through all of this, what feels like actual hot lava mud of being human a lot of the time. So in this conversation, there were a few YouTube comments that really stuck out to us that we wanted to bring to light here. And one of them I'm going to read directly. So this is one person requested from our last episode, how to release anger. And their response goes on to say, I've been awake and in this practice for a few years now, but in all of my healing, I still find that there is anger within me, directly related to my father from my childhood trauma. He bestowed shame on me and was emotionally unavailable, still is today. I have accepted that he will not change, that I can do and enforce boundaries around how often I see him, that he did the best he could with the tools he had, which are next to none, but still, from time to time, my rage ignites. In my last relationship, I would explode on my partner, something that is very rare for me as a person. I recognize that all past versions of me were expressing all of the anger from all of the past years, but this is not okay. I don't want to be like this in my next relationship. I've been doing the work of regulating my nervous system, creating a routine for self-care, connecting with my inner child, but my mistake was, honestly, abandoning myself in my last relationship, which caused these angry, rageful, fueled explosions. Yes, my partner triggered me, but even as I was aware that I was escalating, I couldn't pull myself back. I couldn't pause. I went for the kill anyway. I won't abandon myself again, but given all of this, I still have rage. I can still feel it there below the surface. How do I heal? How do I actually release it? So thank you to Steph who commented this under our YouTube channel. This was such a beautiful description and a very vulnerable share. I thank you for your transparency and your honesty here, because it's one that I know I can relate to, Nicole can relate to, that many of us on a universal scale can relate to feeling that rage, that anger beneath the surface. And suddenly we find ourselves in a relationship and with a mirror that ignites and pulls almost like a demon out of us that we're not proud of, that maybe for many of us is very new. Like Steph is saying, you know, it's buried anger from all of the past that is now erupting at this person. I'm still responsible for how I react to that person, no matter how they triggered me.
I think what's important to keep in mind, you know, hearing this comment and extending this conversation is that, you know, a lot of times I do get asked, you know, what is the goal of healing? You know, with this idea that the goal of being a healed person is never to have, you know, these moments of anger, though the reality of it is every time we overstep our own boundaries, we self-abandon, we violate, you know, ourself in whatever way. We don't allow our needs to have that space to make the choices to meet them. And to speak to your point, we'll continue to probably be challenged when there's two human beings with different perspectives, with different needs in any given moment. And, you know, having the tendency then to show up in service of someone else and not care for ourselves will always lead to anger. So I think that's an important kind of expectation to remove from ourselves if we do have the idea that the goal is to get to a place where we don't ever feel activated or don't ever feel anger. And again, we spoke much more in depth about this during our last episode, though. You know, anger is a cue for us. It's a marker. It's sending us that message. And even if we've, you know, begun to dive into the depths and explore the anger and release it from our childhood, there still may be moments in real time where we return to those old habits of self-betraying, of not creating the space for our wants and our needs to be acknowledged. And in those moments, we will still touch upon that anger. And so similarly, you know, using it as the marker, releasing it as we've been talking about in this conversation, and very much like that commenter suggested, making sure that more consistently than not, we are tending to ourselves. We are creating space. We are meeting our needs. We are upholding the boundaries to keep us safe. And just because we've learned how to do it somewhat doesn't mean that we don't oftentimes fall back into those old habits and then meet, again, that deep-rooted anger that was manifest in those earliest relationships.
Steph's comment also really, in my eyes, points to the wisdom that is within all of us, because as Steph is sharing, they already know, they honestly are aware that it was their own self-abandonment in this last relationship that then caused that, or at least ignited in some ways, that resentment and that anger. So there's so much wisdom and identification, awareness really already of ourselves that is really important to pause and give our credit to. And another piece of Steph, your comment that I really appreciated is when you say, you know, this is not okay. I don't want to be like this in my next relationship. That again speaks to what Nicole was touching on earlier, that inherently in our hearts, I do believe that none of us want to harm another. We don't actually have ill will towards another. I do really believe that. I know Nicole deeply believes that. And many of you may feel that as well. We don't want to be explosive. We don't want to be harmful. And most of us identify that we don't want to be harmful to another person. And we skip right over that to be harmful to another person, it means that first we're being harmful to ourselves. And we don't even acknowledge that that's a thing. We just push ourselves so far down that we're now focused on feeling sorry about the harm we're causing to another. Well, if I've harmed another, then I have already deeply harmed myself first. So it does come back to that self and that non-betrayal of self. I, as a child, was literally abandoned by my father. So abandonment wounds are very real for me. It also has led into a life where one of the first things I go to do is abandon myself. The same way my father abandoned me, I subconsciously for a very long time, now I'm more aware of it, can see where myself then chose to actually abandon myself, just like the behavior I was modeled. When I abandon myself and I'm in relationship, my resentment gets pointed at those people. It was easier for me not in a relationship because I could abandon myself and I wouldn't necessarily know. I didn't have a mirror held up to me. But being in relationship or partnership, like Steph is sharing here, that was when it came up for Steph, was being in partnership. Suddenly there's all this rage that even Steph could identify was repressed from years past. Relationships, partnerships, they're going to be your mirror. So you can learn a lot too by being compassionate with yourself about what does come up in those moments. If there is explosion, if there is rage there, at some point there probably was an abandonment of yourself, a betrayal of yourself. So paying attention to that and that rage is also going to help guide you into how to actually then release that rage. There are times for me where my angry response, or I say reaction, has me quite literally shaking. My body will go into a shake. My face will get so red. I'll be so livid or so enraged and so resentful about whatever the experience, whatever its connection in story to the past or in the present moment, it's so intense in my body that I'm not going to go sit down to paint my feelings out. I need to actually move. I might need to go scream. I might need to go running if I can run, or punch that punching bag, or go do something very physically active, or literally jump up and down and shake my body out like crazy because that energy has to move. You might find different situations where you're feeling or experiencing anger and channeling it into something like art or creative expression is the route that your body wants to take. Everything you're experiencing can be alchemized into something else. When I was in high school, for whatever reason, when I was extremely enraged or angry, I channeled it into reading, which is really ironic because reading is kind of difficult for me now. I could read the same line 5 times sometimes, or it'll lose my attention. It can take me a long time to read certain things. When I was really enraged in high school, very deeply, you know, grieving and sad, which then led to anger, rage, tantrums, my body's response was very tense. All of my blood was going into my muscles, which also meant my brain was so sharp and so focused because it was in this state ready to fight. My brain then chose to use that sharpness and that focus, and I would just go cover to cover and could read through books so rapidly because I was channeling that energy of that rage and using that sharp focus. Now, I wasn't aware that I was doing it, but those are two very different examples of how that energy could be processed out. It's going to look a lot different. Some of you might want to put yourself into a cold shower. We are very fortunate to have a cold plunge, a cold tub in our backyard. And that shock of getting into freezing cold is sometimes the extreme that my body needs to sort of shock it into an awareness, because my anger might be so intense that I have disconnected from my body. I am way up here just festering and stewing in my mind. And even with all of the awareness that I have now, I still can't drop into my body because it's just so auto and it's so intense. Putting myself in a cold shower or into a cold plunge gives me an intentional choice I'm making to almost shock my body and my physical state back into the present moment so I can actually remember that I have a body, I have a heartbeat, I have breath that I do have power over.
Because ultimately the reality of it is those early memories, those early habits are quite literally wired into us. They're wired into our mind, they're wired into our bodies. And you know, very similarly, not having had, you know, space for my emotional needs to be met, my emotional, you know, space to emotionally connect and find safety through relationships, one of my coreest of wounds is emotional abandonment. And even with, you know, 2 individuals around me, the root or the foundation of being emotionally attentive to myself begins with me. Though somewhere down the line, if I'm not caring for my physical body in all of these ways, tending to my emotions, allowing them space, even if they're irrational in any given moment, then chances are somewhere down the line, I'm feeling angry and resentful. I might be being passive aggressive or being explosive in my relationships. Though the reality of it is those early memories don't go away. I've fallen back onto those patterns. So what I'm exploding from are those older memories, that literal energy wired into my body that began when I stopped caring for my physical body, when I stopped giving myself space to tend to my emotions. And then they erupt outward later, much like Steph is commenting. And it feels like it's this deep depth of endless pit of emotion, because in a lot of ways it is. We've repeated that, we've rewired that, we've spent so much time with that energy in our bodies that even if we've begun to very consistently practice these new habits, it doesn't, while our mind can rewire and our bodies can rewire, they're neuroplastic or have the ability to change, there is still that old pathway wired into us. So it's not going to immediately go away. And it can really, in those moments, feel very overwhelming if, again, we haven't been tending to ourselves physically and ourselves emotionally in the ways that we need to. We usually do meet ourselves later on when we are erupting or exploding outward, and then we can have these moments of insight, these moments to pull back and acknowledge, yes, I did feel the depth of that emotion and it did come and was created in this early childhood, though it was recreated by all these small micro choices that I've made in my daily life.
And outside of those moments, maybe you did go punch a pillow or scream safely in a corner and explained it to those around you. If there's children around you, model that for them. Let them know what's happening, because that will be very scary. If you choose to start shaking and grunting and making all this noise and you're angry and there's children around you, that can be a scary environment. That can also be an okay environment if you just give language to it and explain that to them. So say you have processed in a physical, actionable way some of this anger. And you know, those thoughts come back in later on, that experience floats back into your mind, that wound comes back and it's still there. This isn't a one and done thing. We don't just instantly in one moment release all of this anger that we've carried with us for decades. You can also use things like meditation and imagery in reflective moments when it's not like you're livid and shaking, but outside of those intense moments. I've personally found some meditations or imagery on anger, maybe imagining your anger like an angry tornado, or turning it into an object that you can imagine and actually visualize it. For those of you who are able to visualize, create this visual of your anger, represent it as an object or a picture in your mind, and allow it to run through its territory. Or maybe it's turns into, someone suggested throwing oranges at a brick wall when you're really angry, which I thought was a complete waste of oranges. So I'm realizing mentally, it still gives me the same satisfaction. To something about the splat against the wall is really satisfactory. There's also, if you could Google, a ton of meditations on anger. I did one for a little while that I would fall asleep to that had me pull down on an elevator the five people that I had a lot of just past anger, resentment feelings towards that was unresolved. And it's much more in depth. So I'm just giving you a paraphrase of it, though. Safely in this visual and meditation, I got to stand in front of each person and speak all of my truth to them, everything that I was feeling, everything that I couldn't get out. And then I was able to obliterate them. Now, it happened in a more visual, cosmic way where they just sort of obliterated and disintegrated into stardust, not blood and guts everywhere. It wasn't violent or gory, though it was a really responsible way for me to have an experience where, you know, it feels valid. You want that like violent, angry reaction because that's what's real for you. I could take responsibility for that and find a release through this visual meditation of actually getting my truth out and then making the other person obsolete. I didn't have to harm anyone in the process, and I didn't have to harm myself or my own heart by having all of these angry, rageful feelings about this person. Because even if I held on to that resentment and that rage for that person, they might never know about it, but that harms me. That rage, that resentment gets pushed into my tissues, into my cells, into my organs. That creates disease. That disease is dis-ease in the body for me. So finding responsible ways for you to move through your anger in the moment, like shaking, screaming, going for a run, playing a game of soccer with your kids, and then also outside of it in reflection, maybe using that imagery or using meditation also to support you in exploring what's underneath this anger. Because for a lot of us, that anger, most of us, I think all of us, anger doesn't come from a bad place. It doesn't come from a place where we want to genuinely, intentionally, and consciously harm another human being. It's a response that we feel comfortable with in a survival mode that actually comes from a deep fear and a deep sadness and grief.
I think what's really important here to note too is that for some of us, releasing our anger actually does mean taking those steps interpersonally, making that communication, setting that new boundary, you know, creating that space in that relationship for ourselves and our needs to be met. So a lot of times, I know we spent the majority of this episode talking about kind of our physical bodies and releasing it, though there are some, you know, actual conscious tools and choices we can begin and might need to begin to make within our relationships with others to release our anger by setting that new boundary, by showing up in service of our own needs, even if and especially when they are in opposition to those around us, which also then, of course, brings up the point and a question that comes our way quite frequently, which is, what happens if that person's not in my life, if they have died, if they're no longer available to make that communication? I think that beautifully then ties into all of those suggestions that Jenna is just now offering us, which is then it might be, you know, taking that more visualization step process or journaling or just allowing ourselves to speak our truth or create new boundaries in the relationships that we do have access to, because we might not all be able to go back to that person and, you know, share things from our perspective and meet our needs in this new way by creating the new boundaries or whatever it might be. That might not be possible, though we can, you know, through visualization and through the new steps, assuming that we're probably repeating some of those same older patterns by not having boundaries, by not meeting our needs, we can actually release our anger through those more interpersonal actions as well.
One last thing to leave you all with as we wrap this episode. I saw this post the other day from David Kessler, who many of you may know. If not, he is a pioneer and someone that we really admire on grief. And grief is something that seems to ebb and flow into all of our conversations because we're all experiencing it. I know Nicole lost her mother within the last 2 years, 6 months after Nicole's mom died. My brother Jake died. Grief has been a real experience on our part. And I keep getting messages, whether on Instagram, YouTube, all of our platforms really, that are coming back to some of our grief episodes, or maybe they heard us speak on grief once. And every day there is a new person reaching out to share with me, you know, the tragic loss they just experienced, or how an episode or conversation we had on grief months ago maybe didn't resonate with them then, and now they're really in the thick of it. And David Kessler made this post that I thought was just so simple and so profound. Now, David is bereaved of both of his parents have passed and also his son, David Jr. And he spoke to those waves of grief, that moment of, if you have experienced or allow yourself to feel and experience grief, you will know you don't get to choose when it comes. It can be an overwhelming emotion that can lead a lot of us right into anger, because the pain and the heartbreak of that just emptiness and that response to feeling deep grief and sadness is too vulnerable. It's too scary. It's too much to bear. So we shift into anger. And I know I've experienced these moments where suddenly we'll be going about our days and I can notice myself, my heart rate will start going. I'll just suddenly start crying. Maybe I haven't even gotten to anger yet. I'm just in deep sadness. And my partners around me very lovingly might notice and ask, you know, what's wrong? And I will notice my defense happen immediately, whether it comes external or not. My defense internal goes into, what do you mean, what's wrong? Jake's dead. And I don't even necessarily truly believe that it's a wrong. I do think, you know, everything happens as it is, though I watch my human part come in and I watch this protective part immediately get resentful and upset that I have to explain what's happening. And I don't have the language, or hadn't had the language, to just acknowledge and say, you know what, this is a Jake moment. And I learned that from this post of David, where he specifically was saying, you know, oh, it's just a David Jr. moment. It's just a moment. And I think of this too with your mom as well. I know you likely experience those moments where it just comes, these thoughts come, these feelings come. And being able to, in the moment, just acknowledge it. And I will start doing this in my own life and saying, oh, it's just a Jake moment. There's nothing to fix here. There's nothing to change here. It's just something that I'm experiencing. Something so small like that struck me as so profound because it gives us an opportunity to give language in a moment to an intensity of an experience that often the other person, as well-intended as they are, can't quite get or grasp because it's your own experience. I will never know what it's like to be Nicole and to have lost her mom in life when she did and how she did. Much like Nicole will never understand the experience of what it's like to be me in my life and lose Jake in the way that I did. And I'm intentionally bringing this grief into a conversation around anger because I think that so much of our anger in the world is such profoundly repressed and suppressed grief that we also haven't normalized or understood how to dealt with. So if that resonates with you in any way, thank David Kessler. And David, thank you for that very simple and profound sentence and language of saying, oh, this is a Jake moment. Again, we're giving ourselves language to create space and awareness in very excruciating times that is naturally going to create more of that pause where we can choose to respond in a way that doesn't harm ourselves or harm another person.
Actually, very much appreciate you sharing that with David as I enter. And it'll be my mom's birthday coming up on April 20th. So in the back of my mind, you know, just becoming aware, you know, and making that suggestion to all of you listening, if we have those markers where grief or anniversaries, you know, of upsetting events where anger, you know, might become very viscerally present for each of us, you know, becoming aware of those moments and, you know, acknowledging that those might be the times where it is just beneath the surface, where it is exploding outward, and giving ourselves the grace, maybe the physical space in our life to tend to ourselves, to allow ourselves to be with whatever it is that is coming up. So on the heels of yet another one of my mom's birthdays with her no longer being present here on this earth with me, I've actually had a conversation with both you, Jenna, and Lolly of the possibility of, you know, clearing out my schedule for Thursday. So just really practically, you know, outside of one meeting that I can't necessarily change, giving myself the afternoon to have space to just be present with whatever spectrum of grief, of anger, or whatever it is that might come up, allowing myself the space to tend to it, to be with it, so that I don't just transfer that into my relationships, becoming resentful or angry at those around me, giving myself the opportunity to be present with my grief, whether or not it is present on that particular day. So saying that to also say, for those of you who are interested, I mentioned the Self-Healer Circle, which is our global private membership, where every month we dive into a new topic of healing, of course, allowing our anger being one of our most recent ones. We are actually getting ready to open for enrollment. We only open for enrollment 3 times a year. So it is a very exciting time as we're getting ready to open again on May 1st. So anyone who is interested in more information or who is interested in joining, a reminder that enrollment occurs, enrollment links are only sent out when you jump on our waitlist for the Self-Healer Circle. You can click the link in the show notes or visit the website at selfhealercircle.com for more information or to jump on that waitlist to continue the journey in our beautiful Self-Healer Circle membership. And as always, we're looking forward to continuing this conversation with this beautiful community, the Self-Healer Soundboard, on next episode.